The Big Picture, brought to you by Bible Society Australia, shining the light of God's Word into every corner of your world. And Sydney's Hope 103.2, there's always hope. The Big Picture, a Christian insight on the world of film, television and popular culture, with magazine editor Ben McKechin and scriptwriter Mark Hadley.
G'day, I'm Ben McKechin.
And I am science mad, Mark Hadley. Welcome to The Big Picture for Monday, June 29.
Coming up on today's show, Mark, it's time for our Timely Time episode. That's right, time travel is going to feature in a massive way.
Hasta la vista, babies. The Terminator franchise is back.
And we're going to enter the TARDIS to ask why Doctor Who remains so popular with the young and the old. Time. There's going to be so many time references in the show. Maybe people should start counting how many time references.
I thought you were going to do references. A Peter, Paul and Mary song for a moment there.
No, but there's still time for that. Okay. Thank you very much. And the reason, Mark, we're talking about time so much on this show is because why?
Well, because we actually went back in time to change the episode that we were going to do to this one, because it's a much better idea. Now, this week we're actually talking about all the sorts of fantastic things that are coming up, and in particular, Terminator Genisys. You see, 30 years ago, a killer cyborg from Austria uttered those fateful words, "I'll be back," and that's my best impersonation.
It was all right.
Thank you. And created one of the most memorable movie lines of all time. And Arnold Schwarzenegger, the Governator, has kept the promise three times so far with Terminator 2 Judgment Day, Terminator 3 Rise of the Machines, and Terminator 4 Salvation, which turned out, ironically, to be something of an overstatement, given that this week Arnie is back again to save us with Terminator 5 Genisys. This week we take a special look at a franchise that seems determined to play on our fear of technology and our rock-solid certainty that we're just not that good when we occupy the creator's chair.
The time you're going back to should be scared and weak. Take care of her for me, Kyle.
It's all wrong. John sent me here to save you.
From the Terminator that was sent back to kill me, I know, but we already took care of him.
We?
I've been waiting for you.
And a majority in the Senate.
Terminator is back, Mark. So it's at cinemas this Thursday. And despite how important we are in the film and TV community in Australia, we haven't seen it yet. They didn't show it. Arnie didn't call us and invite us to a screening.
I don't know what was going on there. It's probably because I failed to send him a Christmas card this year.
No, but we've got some idea about what's going on in Terminator Genisys. And as tends to happen with these movies, there's a lot of play with time travel and timelines and time frames. So the last couple of Terminator films that you just mentioned, particularly those third and fourth films, didn't go so well, not nearly as well as those successful two in the 80s and 90s, which really revolutionized action science fiction filmmaking. Like James Cameron, before he took over the world with Titanic and Avatar, directed those films and were just phenomenal, had a phenomenal impact on action filmmaking, blockbuster filmmaking. And I think this movie, Terminator Genisys, suggests it's going back to those kind of earlier films and a little bit literally as well. So again, we've got a film for anyone who doesn't know, like the basic plot of Terminator is these cyborg robots. Cyborg, that's the same thing. These cyborgs being sent back.
I just want to interrupt there. Cyborgs and robots for the truly geeky are quite different things.
Thank you.
We know that. Ben will explain later.
Mm. But this cyborg sent back from the future to kill, usually to kill a woman or a man. So the woman is Sarah Connor. The man is John Connor, her son. And it has to do with a big warfare in the future to do with machines versus humans. And again, in Terminator Genisys, that's happening where the Terminator is sent back to the past to kill off Sarah Connor. But this time around, it seems like they've mixed again with the time frame so they can come up with another franchise, because that's what you can do with time travel movies.
Yeah.
Just rewrite it over and over again.
Can I just ask quickly before we get into the interview proper, do you need a flowchart to follow this film?
Yeah, you do. Actually, in Empire magazine that was out in May, they had a Terminator Genisys special on the front cover. And in that edition of the magazine, there were these different flowcharts to try to explain how things work. And even when you look at that, it's really complicated and confusing, like loads of time travel movies. And we're going to talk more in this show about other examples of time travel films, including a top five list of time travel machines that have been used. But yeah, trying to wrap your head around what exactly goes on in the Terminator universe can be difficult, and I'd imagine that's going to happen again in Terminator Genesis.
So is it a reboot? I mean, like, 30 years since this whole thing's been going, 31 to be exact, I was there in 1984. First film I actually ever saw on my own. It was like a
great choice.
I know. Well, I mean, you know, I didn't really know that much about the film at the time. I'd only seen The Wizard of Oz before. But, you know, there you go. First film I'd ever seen on my own. And so it was a great moment. Fantastic history. Really memorable. But here we are 31 years later. Are we just doing the same thing again? Like the Star Trek time trick? You know, let's just destroy the timeline.
Like those recent Star Trek movies that you just overwrite what you've come before, and you just do it easily with one line of dialogue which says something about time travel.
I came back a little earlier.
Yeah, and once you start doing that, you can mix with all kind of alternate universe, alternate realities, alternative futures, which is what the Terminator series has played on for a long time. Yes, so it's definitely a reboot, a bit like Jurassic World in the past couple of weeks, which it was unbelievably took over the world itself and the box office and like the money that film's made. So it seems like a good time to plunder movies from the 80s or 90s that were really successful, come back with a new version, which is basically the old version, but just got some really new special effects. They've got Arnold Schwarzenegger again back in this new film.
And a plausible reason for why he's so old.
That's right. They do explain in the movie ancient. Why he's so old. One of the big shifts that's going to happen in Terminator Genesis, the director of this film, Alan Taylor, was saying that the first couple of movies were born out of the idea of Cold War paranoia and fear of nuclear Armageddon, that we're going to blow the world up and destroy it because of our insanity and fighting each other. Terminator 1 and 2 were sort of under the shroud of a nuclear holocaust. Now, because the times that we're living in now, we seem much more wrapped up and in love with, but also terrified by technology. The technology aspect of Terminator is going to be emphasized in Terminator Genesis.
Are we actually afraid of technology? Is that what it's basically
Mark,
saying?
Mark, be afraid, friends. Be afraid.
I thought, because on the one hand, society's kind of really, really into their mobile phones. But why would we be terrified of technology? How does this even follow as a plot line?
Well, if you've been following anything about the Terminator whole series, it basically suggests that technology can come back from the future and kill us. So we should be frightened.
Yes, exactly. I'll be going home to unplug all of my appliances right now.
But it really does play on that idea, which been plenty of movies that and TV shows we discussed on this program that play with this idea, everything from Jurassic World to another release earlier this year called Ex Machina, where when we play God, when we're creators, when we try to develop things ourselves, and particularly when we try to develop something that's similar to humanity, where we try to create our own artificial intelligence, we then get scared about it because we think it's going to come back and destroy us, which I think so it shows that there is actually humanity in it, because humanity keeps fighting against itself all the time. So what the Terminator franchise has done very well with technology is demonstrate that when we play God and we try to create stuff, we like the fact that we can do it and we like what it can do for our lives, but then we get freaked out when it turns on us and again comes back from the future and tries to kill us, which is happening again in Terminator Genesis.
That is weird. Can you actually name a single film where we turned out to be creators and didn't realize that we'd messed up taking over that job?
No.
And there's a second of silence for radio. Yeah.
No, I don't think so.
I know. Coming up this week, as you said already, Terminator, I'm looking for the details. It actually hasn't been rated yet. And so one of the things that we're actually going to have to say is that it's probably going to be an MA-15 plus rating for violence and sci-fi themes. We'll find out as we get closer to the show.
So following on from Terminator Genesis, which has really sparked this time travel edition of the big picture, we then just jumped to something remarkably related.
Have you had enough of the Terminator series? I think not.
Because if you haven't, we're now onto the small screen with the Sarah Connor Chronicles. And this Sarah Connor Chronicles, it was launched in 2008, which was barely 12 months before the release of the fourth Terminator film, Terminator Salvation, if you're keeping up. So Fox Television greenlit this science fiction series that were built on the titanium bones of the franchise that James Cameron started way back in 84, which we just discussed when we were reflecting on Terminator Genesis. Now, Sarah Connor Chronicles on the small screen picks up the story after Terminator 2, where Arnie says bye-bye while he was sinking into a pool of molten steel. And for anyone who hasn't seen that film, we just ruined the end of it for you. But
it's not really a ruin.
But you should go and watch Terminator 2. You should. It's fantastic. Kids be warned, there's a lot of violence in there, but it's an amazing piece of action
filmmaking. Some really good cool guns, too. Sorry, kids.
But though the big guy was gone from the Terminator landscape after Terminator 2, the Terminator still left behind our spiritual mission to have a second go at every mistake we've made.
I don't know about God or heaven. But I do believe that someone or something wants this world to burn.
Machines. Sarah. Machines. They are coming. You can pretend they're not, but they are coming, and they are faster and stronger. And they have been built to do one perfect thing. To kill you.
Produced by 20th Century Fox Television, Warner Brothers Television, and C2 Pictures. Basically, this series came out in 2008 and revolves around the lives of Sarah Connor, played by Lena Headey, and a 15-year-old John Connor, played by Thomas Dekker. And they're following on from the events of T2, as Ben was saying. And with the help of a reprogrammed female Terminator, strangely called Cameron, it's a nod, to Cameron.
I see what they've done. Thank you, yes.
But played by Summer Glau. Okay, who you might remember from Firefly, Serenity.
No.
There you go.
No, I didn't really watch that.
Science fiction is what we're all about this week.
That's what you're all about.
I'm all about all the time. Anyway, so aided with this reprogrammed female teenage Terminator, they leap forward from 1984 to 2007 and go on the offensive, looking to kill off Skynet before it achieves consciousness, which was basically the plot of Terminator 2 anyway. However, they discover that the nasty network has actually sent stacks of Terminators back. So we're not talking about, every time they lay this up, I can't help but feel that there is just some great long queue of people waiting in a time machine somewhere in the future going, okay, no, you're going to 1984 September, you're going to 2005.
That's what I always thought about all these Terminator films, and not to pull the rug out from them, but it's pretty easy to do when you just think, we'll just send another one back.
I know.
And maybe 5 minutes earlier
to the correct location. In 1984, they say, just before we blew the entire Skynet, they sent one back. Well, apparently that was a very long fuse. They managed to get like 20 people through that door.
And Skynet's that big corporation. It's like the evil corporation, the evil empire in the Terminator franchise, isn't it?
Where mega sentient computer.
Yeah, where all artificial intelligence eventually pours into, takes over the world. The machines rise up and then come back and start fighting humanity, which is the basic architecture of the Terminator franchise. So that's still happening in Sarah Connor Chronicles.
The only sort of real addition is in the Sarah Connor Chronicles, we actually find out that human beings are pretty bad too. And so there's a bunch of corporates who are thinking they can reshape the future as well. Trading on the good graces of a machine that's trying to decimate all humanity.
Yeah.
I know. I'm not sure what their chances are. And there are two seasons, but Fox basically decided to knock it off just after the fourth film came out.
Right. So there's a little bit of overlap between the Terminator franchise. Does it add much, do you think, to the... Well, given we've had so many Terminator films, we've got another one coming. Did we need Sarah Connor Chronicles?
It doesn't. And the reason why it doesn't is because it deliberately ignores... The way it actually fits the timeline is it ignores everything that happened in Terminator 3, Rise of the Machines, which is a good idea because another movie first, that was the first film I fell asleep in. And Terminator 4, Salvation. So it's just... Like, it sits as this sort of like a useless appendage hanging off the side of the entire franchise. You do need a flow chart to follow the comings and goings because they don't just muck around with people coming and going and all that sort of stuff. They have alternate timelines that somehow collide as well, so get a few extra pads ready to sort of try and note that. But Sarah Connor remains that sort of prototype female heroine. You like Ripley out of Aliens, you end up with this character that strangely is still quite watchable, and that's what I think it's survived two seasons for.
And so Sarah Connor is still like kind of heading up the human resistance. She's sort of the figurehead, and her son John Connor too, like the Terminator films. They're still the epic.
They're still trying to knock off Skynet.
Yeah. So there's still obviously a lot of similarities and characters taken over. What about some of the ideas that come from the Terminator films and pretty much like every other time travel film you can list off? This particularly the idea, like the idea of the do-over. If you had a time machine, you'd have this chance to like reset your mistakes, or you could sort of jump all over the place and you could change things. Is do-over big in the Sarah Connor Chronicles?
It is in the Sarah Connor Chronicles. It's the motivation. The essential motivation for Sarah is that she doesn't want the world to end. She doesn't want Judgment Day to come about. But
which is a massive plot point in the through all the Terminator films, wasn't it? That we're heading towards this Judgment Day. Some of the films, like the first two, were more about trying to avoid it. And then when we get to like the third and fourth, it was more accepting it and then kind of living on after it. But
that's right. People should realize this, that the approach to, like, time travel films are almost always about the do-over. What would I change? And yes. That says something about us as humans, that, you know, we actually don't look back on our lives with satisfaction. And we say to ourselves, you know, if I had enough omnipotence to go back, I would change my life. I would do something different. Now, that's actually kind of telling because, you know, there's a lot of positive thinking out there saying basically, hey, you know, be satisfied and happy with you are. But, you know, anybody given the opportunity to change one thing in their life would not have much of a problem coming up with what that thing was. We all seem to have something back there. And yet the big thing that the franchise, the Terminator franchise sits on is the one thing we want to avoid is judgment. There's this thing
so
called
it's not
judgment
just, it's not just about going back and changing things in our past to help our future. It's also trying to avoid things happening in the future as well. But it's amazing that the Terminator franchise, and I'm not sure, I haven't seen Sarah Connor Chronicles, so I don't know, but it's amazing that these movies focus so heavily on humanity heading towards a reckoning, heading towards this judgment day, largely for the sins of humanity, for these wrongs that we did, that we contributed to. These movies so emphasize that this is coming. Does that happen in Sarah Connor Chronicles? That they're heading towards this thing that really they try to avoid, but are they going to be able to?
Yeah, and it's interesting that you say that the sins that we've done, because the key sin has been occupying God's place. We made a child that should not have been made, and this child is now going to, you know,
come back from the future and kill
retribution
us.
On us. You know, we're not competent when it comes to controlling things like creation.
Yeah,
and so it's a real mess.
So, do you think, like Sarah Connor Chronicles and the Terminator movie franchise, do you think they help us to understand? One of the things about life that I don't think we sit back and reflect on too often, which is life moves in one direction. Like, it keeps going in one direction up until this point, although movies have keep telling us we can time travel, we can't. Do you think that there's something to the fact that God has set in motion a universe that moves in one particular direction?
Yeah, I think so. I think actually God has deliberately created time to give us limits, to actually see that we are human. You know, we are finite beings. You know, just by definition, we can't control everything. We cannot. There will be a beginning to every beginning. There is going to be an ending. You know, and so we know that we're actually going to approach a point in which everything runs down or everything stops. And I think God's done that deliberately so that we will actually seek him. You know, in fact, that's exactly what the book of Ecclesiastes says, that God has placed eternity in the hearts of men that they might seek him. When we try and make things last or perfect things or somehow, we compare it against the idea of things going on forever and ever, we realize we fall short. And so we go, well, there's got to be something that lasts, and we seek God. You know, and I feel like the interesting thing about the Terminator franchise is that in the first couple of films, we're kind of coming face to face with that. You know, there is an ending. We have to do something about that. Or, you know, we have to somehow change ourselves in order to meet that reckoning. The weird thing about the last two films, you know, Rise of the Machines was even embracing it, going, there's nothing you can do to avoid judgment. The last two films, in particular this one coming out, we are going to avoid judgment. And if there's anything about like a great arc to show how we've changed our attitude towards judgment, this time we're going to knock it on the head. You know, Terminator 4 Salvation and Genesis are basically going to take us to the point where we win. And I feel that's really us overreaching, only this time it's in real life.
But we were just talking about the Sarah Connor Chronicles, of the TV series that was born out of the Terminator franchise. It's rated M for action violence, and it's available across Australia on DVD and Blu-ray. And while we're on the subject of artificial intelligence and thinking about us creating stuff, you wrote an article for Insights magazine recently from the film that was out earlier this year, Ex Machina, that we've talked about a bit on this show. And you were discussing the idea of whether the fact that we could create, possibly could create things in our own image, as in humans, creating something, creating artificial intelligence that could represent us, that may possibly be a pointer to there being a creator of the universe, where some people would argue that that's not the case. If we could create stuff ourselves, that would surely mean God's dead. Whereas your article was suggesting maybe that's not the case. So want to investigate those thoughts more of Mark's there on Insight's website right now.
I really love the soundtrack segment, if only because I can do this. Basically, it's torture you on air.
I don't know why I chuckled.
This week, we're actually going to have a look at a series of themes, you know, recognisable, what I call recognisable, science fiction.
But we've done this before
themes.
With other stuff. You said they're recognisable, and I end up looking like a chump on air.
Yeah, well, you know, there's not much we can do about that. Look, I've got to say, for my generation, which is arguably a little bit older than Ben's, we really grew up with science fiction as a mainstay of television. Like, it was just one of those wonderful Saturday morning things. Picture, if you will, me in my rayon pajamas, streaking through the lounge room, creating a wave of static electricity behind me as I jump into the beanbag to watch as many classic science fiction episodes as I could before my mother woke up and put an end to that obvious evil. You know, it's so, it was, I think those deep, funny, fantastic shows are still buried there in the psyche somewhere. I think that there's so much we actually take from them that, you know, somewhere out there, it's foreseeable that if I play 8 mashed up themes, you'll be able to pick them. Have you got your pen ready?
I'm getting a pen. I should really do that.
Have a
yes.
pen. You should. Have a piece of paper.
I was too busy picturing you in your pajamas running okay, so we're gonna electric play... static, and I wish I had a time machine to go back and see that.
And I just want to say that the only other person who'll probably get every one of these is Russ Matthews. Big shout out to him, because he's just a junkie when it comes to sci-fi television. But for people who are ready to play this game with me, let's hit the button. I'm sorry, I'm just lost in my own personal little moment there of television, you know.
I'm just lost.
I'm just lost.
You're right in your introduction to this segment that the reason you do choose this is just to make me look stupid. Mission accomplished, Mark. Mission accomplished.
Okay. So there were 8 in there.
I reckon I've only got 2, and one is a straight, and I don't think, and that actually doesn't make sense what I've thought is going to be. So I'm just going to say 2. I only got Star Wars at the top.
Star Wars was the first one.
It's the first one. And then somewhere around 6 or 7 was the X-Files.
Okay.
But then everything else is just a blur of you smiling over there, like fond reminiscings of sci-fi TV shows. I sit here with blank piece of paper and people are laughing at me out there. Great. It's good.
Yeah. Look,
please explain what was going on with all of that.
The second one there was a classic black and white series. From the 60s, My Favourite Martian.
Of course. I know the show.
There you go. But listen, there is no excuse for not picking up the third one. Star Trek?
I mean, that is there is, because I didn't watch it.
Oh, okay. Well, there might be that small detail there, okay?
That's an excuse, people.
For people who were struggling with there was an obscure one I stuck in there.
One?
Yeah. Heroes was in there.
Oh.
Heroes. Oh, okay. Five seasons
pick
can't
the
be
science
wrong.
Science fiction fan okay. over there.
Okay, but of course, this is like Dance of the Sorcerer. I can't remember the name of the actual track, but right in the middle, Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. It just has to be one of the most recognizable
Does
themes
it?
Of all time. Da, 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 da. Right. It's not going to help if I sing it again, is it? Okay, but you did get the X-Files.
I did,
okay?
Thank you.
And then I could not believe...
Not even redeemed.
You didn't pick up the next one, which Consuelo, our cameraman, did. Futurama.
Oh, I didn't watch it.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go. It's not counting
the
taste.
I'm not going to try to defend myself.
And the last one, you know, look, I just was all for me and people who are born
in the whole thing was all for you.
The 70s. Buck Rogers in the 25th century.
Oh, right. Nice one.
Which is actually like a weird plot about an astronaut who, you know, it's almost a spoof of itself. Astronaut gets frozen in time, gets thawed out in the future. His quaint ways of the past somehow help us deal with great battles of the... with aliens, you know, it's great. I'm going to move on. How about we talk about press record?
Mate, I'm glad you enjoyed that segment so much. I got an education.
We're going to come back and educate you again.
Yeah,
I've got
great.
Another eight later in
good.
The show.
Let's
but this time they'll be much easier. Because I'm going to confine them to 78 to 82.
Let's move on to someone who is actually educated. So already on the show, we've been talking loads about time travel, this huge staple in the science fiction realm of movies and TV. We've been trying to discuss them from every conceivable angle, particularly when it comes to the Terminator franchise. And we're going to be talking in a few minutes about top five time travel machines. But we're the first to admit that we actually know nothing about time travel, Mark.
It is true. We know
that
nothing.
That is a fact. We know nothing. Like, and scientifically
even,
speaking.
I just want to say, even if we did, we wouldn't be allowed to tell you.
And what we did know is from movies. But would any of the fantastic plot lines that Hollywood constructs stand up against even a mild whiff, a mild wind, a mild gust of suspicion, Mark, of skepticism? If you just said, really, really, would that happen? Well, we turned to our expert in all things science-y, Scott Lucas. And Scott spent years making science clear to kids in the classroom. So Mark this week caught up with Scott in the hope that he could issue Hollywood a passing grade in the physics of time travel.
Scott, thanks very much for joining us for The Big Picture. Now, let me start off by asking, are you a fan of science fiction films? Or is that kind of like asking a journalist if he's a fan of newsroom films? Do you spot too many things wrong to actually really get into it?
No, I do really enjoy a good science fiction film. I wouldn't say it's my favourite genre, though. I tend to prefer, you know, comedies are probably more where I like to be watching things, and action films as well. The science kind of bent does make me pick things out that can kind of ruin movies for me, but sometimes I just have to suspend disbelief every once in a while so I can enjoy the movie.
Yeah, okay, well, let's see if we can't break some of that belief, because actually what we've got you on the show for is to try and explain a bit of science to us and tell us where we might be going wrong with our favourite films. Now, from my humble opinion, there's roughly two types of time travel film. And let's start with the one I like to call the you can fix it model. Kind of like Back to the Future. If you don't like how things turn out, just go back and have another go. What does science say about the idea of traveling back in time, changing it, and then coming back and instead you've got a Ferrari now instead of a Volkswagen?
There's a whole lot of things about science which make a lot of that fairly implausible. The first problem is that anything that has mass can't go faster than the speed of light, and you need to go faster than the speed of light to go back in time. So, unfortunately, you've kind of had the gate shut in your face before it's even begun to be possible to go back in time, as far as we can tell.
I can see why film producers would want to look over that straight away, because
yes.
No one likes a film that finishes within the first 5 minutes. If we could only go back in time, no, you can't.
So, yes.
There's no squeaky leeway on this. You're not going to help me at all and say, oh, unless, of course, you have a 1.21 gigawatts of electricity nearby or something like that.
Well, there is a theory around the idea that you might be able to bend space-time and create a wormhole, kind of like in the movie Interstellar, if you've seen that. You know, you create enough energy and you can somehow bend the fabric of space-time, and that creates a bit of a bridge. But the problem with that is even that can't allow you to go faster than light. And so you're still going to have that same problem of not being able to go back. You can only go forward slower.
Gosh, you'd be really hard in a pitch meeting for, like, film scripts. I could see you sitting there across the table and saying, no, come on, Scott, I've got this great idea for a box. It's bigger on the inside than it is on the outside, but I take it we wouldn't go far. Okay, let me move us on to the second sort of time travel film. This is what I like to refer to as the, quite technically, the Doris Day model. The que sera, sera, whatever will be, will be. So, you know, 12 Monkeys, Deja Vu, more recently Looper, Predestination. These are films where when you try and change something, you'll just find out that whatever happened was going to happen, and you're the cause of it anyway, that there is a fixed loop. Is science more comfortable with this sort of idea?
I think that idea that, yeah, you're going to always end up with the same result is probably much more in keeping with the ideas that a lot of this stuff isn't actually science, to be honest. It's more just theories that are, you know, fancy philosophy masquerading as science, because there is no scientific principle behind any of this. But when it comes to the idea of things being always as they're going to be, that's pretty common in science. It's kind of like the idea of you throw a pebble into a river, and, you know, even if you throw in the pebble, the river's going to keep going the same way that it was, regardless of whether you threw the pebble in. Tends to be just the case that whatever you try to do is just going to continue along.
And there's a subset to that question, the idea of things just staying unchanged. It's that the history has a predetermined groove, that it's going to go a certain way, and call it fate, call it God, call it whatever. Like in the Terminator series, there's always going to be a judgment day, no matter what happens. You're a Christian, I know, and a scientist. Do you think history is set?
I do think, as a Christian, that God is in control of everything that happens, and for that reason, God has a plan for what he's going to do. And I do think that there's nothing that we can do as people that can frustrate his plans. And so, I mean, you only have to think of the cross, for example. People thought that they were killing the God of the universe, and yet God used that to bring about some of the most important things that he has done in this whole world. So I think, as a Christian, definitely I would say that things are always going to be the way that God wanted them to be, and he's in perfect control. As a scientist, I think if you take God out of the picture as a scientist, then you're left with a kind of determinism. You're left with whatever was going to happen will happen, just because everything happens as a result of movement of, you know, matter and energy, and there's only one way things could have ever turned out based on the initial conditions. But that's a different story entirely.
Oh, no, that sounds pretty much like Looper. But okay.
Mate, all our questions answered about whether time travel is or is not possible in the real world, and you didn't rip the fun out of the movies and TV. Excellent.
All of our questions are basically no. You can't
that's,
do it.
That's the answer, okay. Which is good, which leads us on nicely to our top five this week, which is the things that movies have done to actually make time travel possible.
Oh, well, good, because...
So from the real world...
I don't trust that science stuff anyway.
Science.
What has science ever done for us?
Nothing, according to movies. When we move, let's just move back to the unreal world from the real world. So top five time travel, time machine, things that make time travel possible.
Great, I'm looking forward to this.
Yeah, now, like I mentioned on a recent episode, one of the great things about being on this show is we get to write our own rules here. And I like to limit what I do on the top five to make it a little bit more specific. And as I was thinking about time travel machines, I realized actually there's not that many in time travel movies, a machine, an actual machine that does it. And also it gets a little bit boring if you just start saying...
The machine
the
here.
Machine. The
that
machine.
Machine.
So I'm going to go for more things that made time travel possible. And a quick word of what I'm not going to put on this list. It should have come in at number one, but because I talk about this movie so often, I banished it from the list. There's a poster behind me, isn't there, for it? Yeah.
Yep.
Back to the Future. I'm not going to talk about the DeLorean.
There will be no DeLoreans.
There will
in
be
this
no
list.
DeLoreans on this list.
The DeLorean transcends this list.
It does.
It's above it.
It doesn't even need this
it's
list.
It's a flying car.
The DeLorean, not banished, just
but,
better than.
But wait, it will be back in our most favourite forms of transport top five, which will be coming,
which will be coming up next week.
There we go.
So let's start the list at number five.
Five.
Mark, how do you think you would get about time? How do you think you would find your way through time?
Well, if I was travelling through time, I would probably need, I don't know, a map.
Mate, you headed me off at the pass. I didn't actually think you would pick it, and you did. In the 1981 film Time Bandits, a bunch of time-traveling dwarves
use
a map. They use a map.
Yeah, it's this time-traveling map.
Ta-da!
Yeah.
So no wonder I stopped doing a time machines list. I'm like, you've got a map. You dudes are using a map.
Okay, why would you exchange complex working parts for a bit of paper?
And this is from the Monty Python team. They were behind Time Bandits. And interestingly, the map of the universe is created by the Supreme Being, a godlike figure, this entity that seems to run the whole universe.
It's almost as if he wanted us to understand things.
It is, and even the great villain in the piece is evil. So I'm just saying, if you want an unusual movie to talk about what the way the universe hangs together and how we operate within it, finding our way through, maybe you could do worse than Time Bandits. So that's at number five with the Supreme Being's map.
Four.
Another way you can get about time, Mark, according to the 2013 film About Time, is stand in a cupboard.
Well, cupboards are remarkably underrated.
But they are.
When it comes... I mean, if you think about the Narnia Chronicles...
I was just going to say, like, we should have known this from the Narnia Chronicles.
I've stood hours in cupboards waiting for something to happen.
And, like, why did scientists in other movies, why have they bothered trying to come up with various contraptions? Like, there was a great film a couple of years ago called Safety Not Guaranteed that the director of Jurassic World, Colin Trevorrow, directed. Fantastic film about loosely about time travel. The machine at the end of that film is great, but it's got nothing on a cupboard.
No, a cupboard is actually practical and everyone has one.
That's right. But unfortunately, not everyone can do this time travel trick. You have to be born into a particular family. You have to have a dad who's Bill Nighy, as played in this film. You have to be a son who's this guy called Domhnall Gleeson, who's most famous probably for the Harry Potter films. And then you can stand in a cupboard and go anywhere within your own life. That's the limitations of cupboard time travel in about time.
But set that aside and it's quite
everyone can do it. Everyone can do it. Three. A tunnel.
A tunnel, a time tunnel.
A time tunnel. That's Why how not? You can get around time in time. So number three, a tunnel. There was a film out in 1988 called The Navigator, a medieval odyssey. And it was a New Zealand film that had...
Now, don't hold that against it.
I'm not, because it came up with the great concept of, we don't need to build some kind of machine. What we need to do is tunnel through the earth, and we can get from 14th century... Europe that's being afflicted by the Black Plague, and we can get to 20th century New Zealand and salvation.
Now, strangely, many Americans still feel that this works, that you can actually go from America and just go across somewhere and they're all primitive and backward. That's how it works.
So maybe that was the inspiration
that
behind...
That was the inspiration
behind
navigator. The time tunnel.
But I just thought for practical... That, in fact, even more than the cupboard, anyone can do it. You can just dig a tunnel. I guess if you could excavate.
State rail. Wouldn't the state rail benefit from a time tunnel?
So they dig through to the
other
side.
They've got those tunnels just sitting around. They're not doing much, obviously, now. Convert them to time tunnels, say I.
Yeah. Well, that's what the navigator says. So dig a tunnel through. And also what you need to do is on the other side of the world, when you get there and 6 centuries later, you also need to take a holy cross with you and put it on the highest church in Christendom, because that will help you with God, apparently, according to the navigator.
Also... Sorry, a what?
Yeah.
A cross. Just on top of it.
But you need the time travel tunnel first.
Tunnel to do that, of course.
Which isn't anywhere near as cool as... A telephone box.
But I see where you're going here.
No, you may not see where I'm going here.
Oh, please let me see where you're going here.
Because you may think I'm going to the TARDIS.
Oh.
You may think that. And we're going to get to the TARDIS very, very soon on the show as we talk much more about Doctor Who.
I'm wearing my Doctor Who waistcoat.
I know, put your
That's waistcoat for people who don't come from Yorkshire.
Yeah, just keep the waistcoat and the download, because I'm not going to the TARDIS at this point, which also is a time travel telephone box. I'm going to the 1989 classic Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure.
Okay, of course, who I named my children after this film.
Very loosely. Because we all should. For anyone who hasn't seen this, and you really should, this has got Keanu Reeves and a guy called Alex Winter, who actually didn't really go on to do much else than this. But they're these two 80s just airheads who have a history project to do.
Strangely didn't affect much in the way of his career. Keanu Reeves continues that role in many films.
But, you know, in similar ways to The Terminator, where they're talking about changing the future and the past and all those kind of ripple effects and that sort of thing. And this occasion is really just about whether you're going to pass a history assignment or not. So what do? A guy turns up from the future to help them with a telephone box that will travel through time, and they end up picking up everyone from Genghis Khan and Socrates, who's called Socrates in the movie, to Abraham Lincoln, and then they do this awesome presentation at their high school. They graduate and they go on to save the future through rock and roll.
It is amazing how, like Project Almanac, that given the power of the universe to change time and things like that, somebody's concerned about their homework.
Brought to you by old school telecommunication device, the telephone box. So that's at number two, but number one. I don't really think it could have been anything else. And given I scratched DeLorean from the list, and you're going to snigger at this, and you might want to mock.
I'm preparing my snigger.
But come on, hot tub time machine.
No, please, go ahead and I'll tell you my objections to a hot tub time machine.
There was a comedy that was out in 2010. Be warned, there's loads of offensive language going on in this film. It starred John Cusack and The Office star Craig Robinson. A bunch of blokes who have this really drunken night all together, a bunch of mates, and they're constantly reminiscing about the good old days back in the 80s when they were better, and they want to go back to this point in their life where things were great because life hasn't turned out so well. What happens? Well, they drink an energy drink. Well, as they're drinking an energy drink in a hot tub while also being drunk, they pour this energy drink on the hot tub. Kapow! Time travel. That, my friend, for me, is the best time machine device ever conceived of in the movie.
So simple that a drunk person could operate it, and yet strangely unbelievable.
Because a tunnel and a cupboard weren't.
Well, I would have gone with the cupboard, okay, but, you know, just mixing energy drinks and electricity is a bad idea. You don't need a tub to actually sort of deal with that.
It just got my vote because someone came up with the idea of Hot Tub Time Machine. They thought of that as a title. They actually wrote a movie about it. It got financed. It got made.
And they made a second. Amazing. They made a second one.
And they made a second one.
Can I just say, though, that what is the attraction about going back in time to maybe something like the period of Genghis Khan or the Middle Ages or the Renaissance if you have to arrive wrinkled and naked? What is the point?
Because you really should have used the time travel device that's used in the Terminator series,
yes,
which is more like
be naked.
Just electricity and a ball, but you always turn up naked. Not necessarily wrinkled, you turn up buff.
Buff, that's the sort of thing. I'd like to go to a time machine that sent me back buff to... But I don't know.
But this isn't your list, and still the winner is Hot Tub Time Machine.
What the hell happened last night?
Is there some kind of retro thing going on this weekend?
Something's going on in here.
Dude is rocking a cassette player.
Leg warmers.
I'm sure there's a good explanation for all this.
Jerry girl!
Excuse me, miss. What color is Michael Jackson?
Black.
Winterfest 86!
I don't understand how we back in time!
I'm so scared.
Must be some kind of hot tub time machine.
Gap so large you could drive a time machine through it.
Time machine.
Thank you, Fernando. No, look, honestly, he's normally and absolutely faultless, but on account of the fact he's been so energetically waiting for my next sci-fi mashup. Okay, and this time
our producer loves the sci-fi mashups.
He does. He sits there. He's actually got a chalkboard out this time round to actually scratch down his answers to the next eight.
Because he knows he'll get more than I will.
No, Ben, this is your moment to redeem yourself. Now, these are...
Doesn't mean I will.
I worked really, really hard, except for out of these eight, five of them. I worked really hard to pick ones that would sit right smack bang within your generation. Okay.
My generation.
This is your generation. Okay. This is except for, okay, well,
except
let's say.
For all eight of them?
No, let's say that there's definitely two you won't get, and that's just for me to snigger, but I'm only human.
Okay.
Now, these ones here are really worth saying. Look, if I love almost every one of these programs. Actually, it's true to say I could have walked into our wedding of any of these themes, but I'll get back to that. Okay, Ben, that's 8. And I've got to say, some of them I'm just so excited about.
Mate, you are bursting out of your chair, bursting out of your waistcoat.
I'm actually going to say that we'll come to it, but number 7 was my favourite, is probably my favourite TV show of all time.
Wow. And I know. It's one I don't think I can play. Let's get number 7.
So let's go. We've got 8.
So number 1, no, what's number 1?
Stargate. Stargate issue
one. A tumbleweed just rolled through my head.
They will be descending on the studio for that one. But okay, there we go.
So the second number one, two, because though, you gave me a hint.
I did. I said Danger, Will Robertson.
Yeah, is that Lost in Space?
It is Lost in Space, yeah.
Thank you. And you also gave me a hint at number 3. This is the way I look less like a chump is you have to give me hints.
Well, Joss Whedon.
Joss Whedon was behind this series called Firefly.
Yeah, fantastic. A combination of Western and science fiction.
And then
yeah,
number 4, I again have Stargate-like tumbleweeds on my list. I do not know what
it was
for.
Battlestar Galactica, I mean, that has got to be...
The favourite show of the character of Dwight on The Office. That's the only link I have to Battleship, Battlestar Galactica. Hear what I said? Whatever Galactica. Yeah. Take that,
Battlestar Galactica
nerds.
Has got to be one of those seasons that people should put on their must-watch list. There's 4 seasons of Gods.
Or I won't. Moving on to number 5, Red Dwarf.
Red Dwarf,
thank
there you
go. Great show. That's a great show.
Yeah, that's
Twilight Zone at number 6.
Yeah. Don't you think that people are more familiar with the sound that people make?
Yeah. But they don't know where it's from.
Yeah, there you
and
go.
And then they just found out.
And number seven, my favourite series of all time.
Is that from Funky Future?
Funky Future it is not.
If that was not the name of the show, it should have been. That song was the funkiest futuristic
theme ever. It's kind of like a cross between...
theme ever.
Yeah, Doctor Who meets Shaft. it's just you can see if there was a time machine, this cool black guy would be driving it. But it's not actually that. It's Space 1999.
What the what?
Now listen, I just want to say,
you made that show up.
People who are regular listeners know we have a Facebook page, we have an email address, tellthebigpicture@gmail.com. Look, if you have heard of and remember Space 1999,
help Mark
my favourite show, then please come back. Commander Koenig, Moonbase Alpha. The premise itself was incredible.
Okay,
a nuclear explosion on the dark side of the moon blows the moon out of orbit and it drifts through space, going through wormholes and things and coming to strange...
Next time you suggest another segment like this, I'm going to seriously rethink. It's all about you. All about you and your funky future.
It is. And the last
number 8,
one.
Doctor Who.
Doctor Who.
Which that was a revised...
It was
is
the latest
from the more
version.
Recent
so
versions?
Season 8, I think, or season 9 of the Doctor Who theme. Because the Doctor Who theme gets updated every few years. Yeah.
Which moves us very nicely, Mark. Very nicely.
Let's not draw any attention to this segue.
But I have.
There you go.
What your kids are watching is... Doctor Who.
It's true.
Doctor Who, they are watching Doctor Who. The Doctor's going to see us now because the BBC time travel TV show, if you can believe this, I know you can, it began in 1963, but it's still going, which means by my calculations, that's something like 52 years this program's been going in all kinds of various forms. And the TARDIS-driving Time Lord keeps on keeping on. So the kids these days are still digging the Doctor. They'd still dig the Doctor. We've been wondering why and whether the science of Doctor Who really stacks up.
This is it, Clara, one of those moments. Moments in which big things are decided. Gallifrey is lost. And it's about time that I did something about that.
Picture the thing you want most in the universe.
Decide how badly you want it.
Doctor! Please, tell me you are not about to do something unbelievably stupid!
Where are we going?
Into darkness.
And of course, that's actually Peter Capaldi as the 12th or 14th Doctor, depending on how you count the timeline.
Because what if you go back in a time machine, it changes?
I'm not
a Doctor Who guy. I actually was a child once.
Yes.
This is true. But throughout my childhood and now into my adulthood, I've not watched Doctor Who. I just haven't really been enthused by the idea. I didn't really know much about what it's about.
Ladies and gentlemen, we actually have the studio divided neatly along a line here with Consuela, Fernando, and Ben on one side. and me. And so basically, Doctor Who was a pretty big thing for me, yeah, growing up. And
it was a pretty big deal for loads of people.
It was. And one of the things you've got to remember, because people might be tuning in going, maybe it's time I try it. Hang on, isn't that a different guy from the last time they had it? Because basically, there have been, well, at least 12 Doctors, really purists, we can argue this out online. Join us on Facebook, we'll chat about how many Doctors there have been. But basically, the Doctor regenerates. So if he is killed... or suffers a catastrophic injury or happens to swallow a time vortex, which happened at a particular point, shouldn't do that, okay?
You can not swallow without a time vortex?
Yeah, you don't be opening the TARDIS and just looking inside for no apparent reason. So anyway...
So how does this all work with the TARDIS and the Time Lord and the Time Machine?
He regenerates, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, but what is the Doctor actually doing?
Like, okay, so
he's obviously not a physician.
Well, look, I have the pleasure of being right back at the beginning and watching the early Doctor Who's, you know, through the pleasure. I'm like one of those guys. Like,
you
I
really
watch
are.
The whole thing. I am one of
You're
those.
Wearing a waistcoat.
Thank you. This is my waistcoat.
But you and your boys now watch this, don't you?
Yeah, that's true. Now, Doctor Who is basically been a sort of a ragamuffin-style character that lots of generations... I loved it as a kid, and my boys are completely into it now.
And
now,
why has it endured you? It's generation after generation we're talking now.
Well, they seem to love Doctor Who basically because he is not your buff hero. You know, I mean, the Doctor does some amazing things, but he is...
It's not like Arnie being sent back nude in the Terminator
that's
franchise.
Right, that's right. If, in fact, the Doctor has been nude on camera for a few occasions and it's not anywhere near, like Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Really need to work out, Doctor.
Yeah,
really
I know,
need to
seriously.
Work out.
If you've got all that time at your disposal, yeah. Why you're not spending some of it in the gym, I don't know. But look, basically, Doctor Who travels around time righting wrongs, and he does it using his head. And that's why one of the things... Not hitting things, you know, but basically he's a
not
thinker.
With the power of his thoughts?
No, he's a thinker.
Right.
And so that's...
Oh, and then he actually takes action to yeah. help people. I thought you meant like mind control or something.
No. So what actually is, I think, attractive to a certain style of kid, I was one growing up, my boys are kind of like this too. If you're a bit more bookish, if you're a bit more sort of story-oriented and fun, if a football is not your favourite friend, then basically, you know, you can feel a little out of some of these superheroes, but yet the Doctor is a superhero, but he's a superhero who basically thinks his way out of every particular situation.
And wears awesome scarves.
Wears awesome scarves, wears a selection of celery at various points. There's all sorts of things you can find there with the Doctor. But look, I think he's...
Why does he go through time trying to right wrongs? Like, who gave him... It sounds a little bit like Spider-Man, like with great power comes great responsibility. Why is he charged with doing...
It wasn't always this way.
Not you back see, in the dark back in time. The, but way long, long, long time ago.
Well before the Time War.
not to be confused with the War of the Machines in the
yes.
Terminator franchise.
This,
there's another Time War.
Originally on Gallifrey, where, yes, we're going to dig deep, people. Basically, Doctor Who was a runaway, okay?
No wonder I didn't watch this.
I know. Can you see me now in the playground? At 12, arguing this out with somebody.
But I better stop joking too, because I've heard that Doctor Who fans can get really like. Listen, so I'm going to stop. Any suggestion I'm mocking, I'm not mocking. I'm laughing at myself because I'm not in on the Time Lord thing.
I just want to say
for the record, Doctor Who fans, I'm not having a go because please don't torch my house.
I will one day share what happened. The one day I did a negative review of a Doctor, it was catastrophic.
But you still can't speak about it.
I can't
you shake
about,
when you talk about it.
It changed my life. It's an incredible story, but we'll get on with it.
So basically, what's with the Time Wars?
He's an ordinary, decent guy who knows what to do, you know, and what to do in the end. He started off as an irresponsible character, but basically learned responsibility. So if you follow Doctor Who as a huge arc over 50 years of television, actually it does make me sound really old now, but if you do follow that arc, what you'll basically see is a guy who started off as... Stole the TARDIS to begin with and was a runaway because pretty much didn't want to sign up to a responsible life as a Time Lord. But as he collides into situations, you'll see him becoming more and more knowledgeable and more aware of the fact that with knowledge comes responsibility. That the more you know about something, the more you are obliged to do something about it. Now, you might see me do a huge 90-degree turn here because I actually love my boys seeing this sort of stuff because I want them to know that the more they know about something, the more they're responsible for it. But basically, it might be how the dishwasher works. You know, that's a base level. If you know something, you're responsible for it. But at the same time, I want them to pick up that in life. You know, if you know about God, if you know about what is right, if you know about what is wrong, you're responsible to do it. Whether or not you're the brawny Arnold Schwarzenegger time-traveling guy or the weedy, you know... Peter Capaldi, a time-traveling guy. if you know, you're responsible. And I think it's a big thing that Doctor Who is really helpful for.
Which all sounds great. And from what I understand, quite entertaining for loads of people. They're really into the Doctor. But is there a harder edge to this series? Like, what about its presentation of science? And from what I understand, like, religion kind of pops up in the show a little bit. But like, do the two collide or do they go together? They do, what happens?
They do, generally speaking, the philosophy. So parents, be aware. You know, your kids, a lot of primary school kids will be into Doctor Who. I won't have to be telling that. You'll know if you've got one, because they won't go to sleep. You know, but
they wear scarves and they try to find telephone boxes.
And they make strange creaking noises in their bedroom. But look, if the what basically happens is that when science collides with religion in Doctor Who, it's always explained that religion is always explained in terms of a lack of knowledge. Oh, you know, those people are actually aliens and you're treating them as gods. Or those people don't have mystical or spiritual or miraculous powers. What they have is technology. And so that's generally the way of explaining away everything. And that's a bit of a pity. But interestingly, I think it's kind of strange that one of the great things about Doctor Who is that he travels in time, but the one place he has never gone is into the life of Christ. Like, he's never... I mean, Jesus is a historical figure. That's one of the greatest things about Christianity as a religion is that it almost puts its head on the chopping block of history and says, take a swing. It is really about a man who lived, and the documented evidence for it is incredible, and his life. Why, if you had a time machine, would you not program 0 AD?
Even just out of interest.
I know.
Like, you think you just want to turn up and have a look. Like,
he goes to the
Show me the water into wine bit at least.
How many times has Doctor Who met Queen Victoria? And yet at the same time, Jesus Christ is standing out there waiting for someone to confront. Now, that's kind of a weird thing. I think it's a bit of a fault in the series. I think it's
also a little bit of like a missed opportunity.
Well, it's a missed opportunity. I think they're playing
for 50 years at least.
They're playing it safe, because the weird thing is, the one thing you can't dismiss is Jesus. As a real historical figure, he is undismissible. So it might work with sort of saying aliens are responsible for this miracle, or aliens are responsible for that particular idea of a religion. But the truth is, it doesn't work with Jesus.
But that's what your kids are watching still, like they used to be back in the day. They are now. The Doctor Who series, it's available. It's out everywhere. How many series are there? Like 1.2 million?
We're up to 2 million and 2, I believe.
Yeah. So they're readily available. This week, Mark, what's around? Actually, I might start.
Why don't you?
That's like a question I posed to myself.
Ben, if you were to ask yourself what was on this week, what would you say?
What I would answer is not very much, because Terminator Genisys, like it's been happening around this time of year, every time at this time of year, always, we get a raft of blockbusters that sail across the ocean of cinemas. And when that happens and they wash up on shore, the weeks that they do, when Jurassic World came out, when Avengers came out, loads of other movies do not show up because they know they're going to get taken down by this massive blockbuster. So with Terminator Genisys actually hitting cinemas on a Wednesday, which is very unusual. Usually movies are out on a Thursday, but it's coming on a Wednesday. Maybe it time traveled and it like skipped earlier day. I don't know.
This version might have been altered for the sake of the time.
So the only other thing I could see that is around is a documentary about the singer Amy Winehouse. And it's called Amy. And it's showing at the Dendigan Palace around the place, maybe at some Hoyts and event as well. So if you're a fan of Amy Winehouse, or you're interested in the what I would understand would be the rise and fall of Amy Winehouse, check it out. Otherwise, there's nothing else new at cinemas because Terminator Genisys is on screen. And what we should have mentioned earlier in the show, so we should now get in a time machine and travel back to the start.
We'll do that later.
But given we can't do that because we don't have a hot tub time machine.
Oh, dang.
We should just mention that there are two Australian stars in Terminator Genisys, Jason Clarke and Jai Courtney. So well played, lads. Well played. You're in a Terminator movie. That's real good.
Thankfully, this week, there's a couple of things coming out on DVD that maybe your kids might be interested in if you don't want to take them off Terminator 5. So July 1, SpongeBob SquarePants the movie is out on Blu-ray and DVD, which is basically just fun. Okay, so there's not much to say about
it. That's a great short review. Fun.
Fun. July 1st also sees Shaun the Sheep, the movie, coming out, which is not as much fun.
But still fun.
But fun-ish.
Is that like one word? Not as much fun, but still fun, full stop.
Fun-ish.
Funnish.
Funnish. Yeah. I could do a one-word thing. Also, July 3rd on the ABC, you're actually going to see... Now, if you're into sort of like detective sort of stuff, we were talking about Inspector George Gently started last week. We're talking about that. Look, the seventh season of it. Arthur and George starts on the ABC. Now,
like the most English name for a show I've ever heard.
I know. And you wouldn't know it, but it's actually a detective series about Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, the creator of Sherlock Holmes.
Yes.
And he's pitched as a detective, and George is... his offsider, in terms of Watson. Okay, so you get the idea.
Sure.
Tune in. Find, make out your own opinions. If you're if you're looking for something to actually read on a similar note, in the July edition of Eternity, which is actually hitting the stands this weekend, Mr. Holmes, Ian McKellen, plays Sherlock Holmes later in life. So Mr. Holmes at 93 is a fascinating story about whether or not what happens to our heroes when they grow old. And the idea that Sherlock Holmes has to solve this last mystery, but in fact he has to solve it while he's also suffering from a tad of Alzheimer's, just the inability to recall anything. There's also a great article in Eternity 2 you should have a look at, Amazing Grace Saved Former Archbishop's Wayward Son. This is a fantastic story. Look, the youngest son of the former Anglican Archbishop of Sydney, Peter Jensen, was basically a ne'er-do-well. He describes himself as a heavy drinker, a womanizer, a lost soul, and you can read all about his amazing transformation through God's grace in the July edition of Eternity. This is a fascinating real life story. We talked about fantasy this week. Try this one on for size. It is fantastic.
Mate, we're running out of time for our time edition. We've come to the end of our show. That's what's been going on this week. Time. On the next edition, well, we can't say too much about it because
it's top secret.
It's a surprise, and we just like the suspense and to keep you in it.
Hang in there. I will say this, there will be a featured thumb and a small jug of flowers.
Attention. I've been Ben McKechnie.
I'm still Mark Hadley.
See you next time.
The Big Picture is a Bible Society Australia production and part of Hope 103.2's family of podcasts and vodcasts.